When the new interim government formally takes power on Wednesday, the American Occupation Administration, known as the Coalition Provisional Authority, will disband. For an assessment of the last year of the U.S. occupation, we turned to two men who worked within the CPA. First, we invited in Colonel Paul Hughes, an active duty officer now at the National Defense University. I asked him about his criticism, that the CPA had ignored careful planning for the occupation prepared by the U.S. State Department.
Let's be honest here. You know, State Department says they were planning, and I've seen the Future of Iraq project documents, and those weren't plans. They were good ideas, good recommendations that should have been considered.
Looking back on the CPA now, what did it accomplish?
Oh, the CPA did accomplish things. When we went into Iraq, less than 1% of the Iraqi budget under Saddam was being spent on health care. It is now vastly improved. The schools are being reopened at a rapid rate and being refurbished. There were a lot of good things that the CPA did, but it was in a completely chaotic environment with a lot of things that were bad. The infrastructure, the water, the electricity, the oil, was just horrendous.
One option that some saw in the beginning of the Coalition Provisional Authority as a way to put more security forces on the ground was the Iraqi military, the rank-and-file military. Instead, that decision was made within the CPA to dissolve the military. Was that a good decision?
When we came in with the order to abolish the military, it pulled the rug out from under all of us. All the trust and confidence we had built up with them to bring them out of the shadows, that all stopped. And the Iraqi army had undertaken a rather interesting effort by some of its former officers in the Ministry of Defense to begin establishing databases of soldiers and officers and civilians from the Ministry of Defense around Iraq. And to say that there was no army, that they had self-demobilized, did not correlate with what I knew. Yet the decision to abolish the military was never coordinated with either Jay Garner or myself.
Why do you think they didn't talk to you?
My personal feeling is that the decision to abolish the Iraqi military was based more on ideology than on reality. But the argument that you will hear is that it was done for pragmatic reasons, that what would we have done with the Iraqi military? Where would we have put their forces, their troops? We lost control of them. We lost faith with them, which in that society is even more important.
When the United States set out on this war, it was billed as being the most precise, most efficient military operation in history. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld favored this small, nimble force structure. He called it nimble. And he dismissed suggestions within the military that hundreds of thousands of troops were needed, especially in the occupation of Iraq.
It's tough to understand that kind of environment if you've never experienced it. You know, the military will execute what its civilian leadership tells it to do, but the advice was not listened to by people who had been on the ground. You know, General Eric Shinseki, former chief of staff of the Army, had done the Balkans. He had done a lot of other things. He knew what he was talking about, and people dismissed it. It was an egregious mistake.
So you're saying that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz were mistaken?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're doing these sorts of stability operations, you need people walking the streets in patrol, making contact with the civilians, assuring them that you're there for their benefit. We don't have that all over Iraq. In some parts, some units are better equipped to do it than others.
Colonel Paul Hughes is a U.S. Army colonel now at the National Defense University. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Another CPA worker, Larry Diamond, is a civilian and a fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. I asked him why he went to Iraq to work for the CPA.
I felt that the Iraqi people wanted Saddam gone and wanted a new political order, and that having toppled the regime and created a kind of vacuum in terms of state organization and authority, we had a moral and political responsibility, and indeed we have a responsibility under international law to help create a new and more decent political order.
Who placed you in Iraq?
Condoleezza Rice and Ambassador Bremer asked me to go, and then I had to wade through the CPA bureaucracy in order to actually get there.
Do you believe the CPA was the proper organization for the task at hand?
I think the CPA was one organization that needed to be involved or could have been involved. We needed to have some means of organizing our engagement in post-war Iraq. I believe that it would have been better to have more Iraqi authority and a more rapid responsibility for and sharing of power and authority of the United Nations. I think the United Nations should have been involved more vigorously and extensively from the start.
You know, quite frankly, you don't sound like the kind of person that Condoleezza Rice and the Bush administration would send to Iraq.
Well, Andrea, let me say, I think that to some extent Condoleezza Rice has been underestimated in this regard. And I think that Dr. Rice and some of the other members of the Bush administration really wanted to see, and I think Ambassador Bremer did on the ground in Baghdad as well, a democracy emerge in Iraq. And Bremer, you know, I have a lot of criticisms that I have made and will continue to make of some of the decisions he took and of some of his style of operation. But I never doubted that he was committed personally to seeing a democracy emerge in Iraq, and I think he was, in fact, often quite eloquent in the vision that he laid out of Iraq's political future.
But you seem to disagree with how he went about it.
I do. I think that we failed to put Iraqis forward more early on in the quest for this. This was a strategic mistake that made this even more of an occupation than it should have been, and I think helped to breed resistance to it and cynicism about it. And if the Bush administration felt that this was so important to United States national security, it had an obligation to level with the American people and find a way to engage in the level of mobilization that would have enabled us to put adequate force on the ground.
Mr. Diamond, when you were working inside the Coalition Provisional Authority, were there other people who felt this way?
I met very few military officers who felt that we had anything like the level of force that we needed in the country.
Is it possible now to build democracy in Iraq?
Yes, I think it is. And I think that we do have an obligation to the Iraqi people and ourselves to continue to be engaged for the rebuilding of that country. You know, if people like the former Baathists or this al-Qaeda leader al-Zarqawi fill the vacuum that we leave behind, we will have a problem that will be far worse in terms of the threat to our national security from Saddam Hussein.
Larry Diamond is a fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. He joined us from Istanbul by telephone. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrea. It's been a pleasure.